the language and your tradition.
Because good or bad, whatever, even though, like, I am American, a lot of people look at you and you say, oh, you're not American, you're a Cuban. So, I don't know, because you look ethnically, you know, a certain thing, it's nice to keep your tradition. If you're going to keep on being called the Cuban, you might as well be one.
Be one completely, eh?
Well, sounds like you enjoy it.
Yeah,
oh,
I do.
Yeah. She enjoy it. You don't know sometimes where she going to be, because while you hear the some Cuban people talk bad or say something to American people, she jump. She jump like lion. Oh, she fight. And sometimes when you hear American people say something about Cuba, she jump.
So you can be on both sides.
Yeah. I'm Cuban when I need to be Cuban and American when I need to be American.
You don't know what she's going to be.
I don't think it's funny. Bad
about America. No, I'm both. I'm American when I need to be and I'm Cuban when
she
I need to be.
She is funny, yeah. You know. And anyway, sometimes say, what do you think my Cuban mix? Because she's a mix. But it's beautiful to you alone.
So you were born in
Key West.
And my father's American.
It's nice.
And my mother's born in Cuba in Oriente.
Yeah.
Yeah, I born in Oriente province.
How much, you still have family there?
I don't have nobody in here. I got all my family in Cuba.
We just came from Cuba two weeks ago. We were there.
Your sister.
We were in Havana, in Varadero, Camagüey,
in
Oriente.
La Villa, I going to the escape, the Matanza.
Was that your first time?
No, my fourth time.
How do you go to Cuba from here? You got to go up to Miami.
The Americans can't go. We have an embargo against Cuba. And
only
American
you got family.
Citizens are not allowed to go over there. Oh, the only American citizen.
No, you just had to go through like Bahamas or some other.
But
country.
That's an illegal way to do it.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Yeah. The only Americans that are exempted to go to Cuba are Americans that have family there.
Yeah, only American, people. Cuban American.
And the other Americans that go there are military people that go to Guantanamo Bay.
And you know what I understand? Yeah. I asked him there, and he said, in case they are going in Cuba, stay a little while. Yeah, Castro, she can keep her there. Yeah. Because she have Cuban.
When I was there, we were looking for an extension because I could have stayed up to a month or longer if I wanted to. Because I come under a different category. My mom, being that she was born in Cuba, Fidel gives her a hard time about going back because he doesn't want the Cubans that are living here and the Cubans that are over there to mix too much because
yeah.
I think he's afraid of a revolution or whatever. He doesn't want them to talk to them. He tries to keep the tourists and the Cubans separate. So my mom only got 7 days, and when we were there, we were trying to get an extension, and they gave us an 8-day extension.
Because she got 15 days, and my sister is very sick. I need a day. Mm-hmm. And he give me the date to Arim, but he don't give me the date to me.
He won't give it to my mother. And then going through immigrations and all that, we found out that if I stay like more than a month there in Cuba, Fidel Castro or the government of Fidel Castro would not recognize my American citizenship and won't recognize that I was born here because one of my parents were born in Cuba and I would be kept there in Cuba. So I was like, after that, it was real quiet. I didn't say much.
No.
I wanted to come home.
Yeah, because I don't understand that. And I found out later, a boy that he born in the United States, but he going to Cuba while he's little. And it's hard to he come to the United States, but he born in here.
Because there's a lot of Americans that are living there.
It's Cuban-born parents. And it's hard to
but
back to the United States.
But they were caught in the revolution, and they're over there, but they can't come over here.
It's hard to come over here to this day. Yeah, but I enjoy doing my conga in a home.
And my family, when we took the pictures over there, we took our pictures of our comparsa. We left most of our pictures there. Everybody was crazy about, because everybody thinks my mom's the crazy one in the family, because she is. She's the loudest and she's the most outgoing and everything. And she's the, you know, very active type of a person. And when they saw that, for the family was something big, and for all my mother's friends and neighbors, it was something big that my mother was doing a comparsa here in the States, and they were so happy because couldn't believe how my mom is keeping the tradition, because they see a lot of Cuban people who go back with their children, and a lot of the children can't even speak Spanish or can barely speak it, and they know they could tell how Americanized they are, and they were really happy that we're trying to keep something of what's theirs.
It's nice.
So they can't even, can they do comparsa over there anymore?
Yeah, do he it? Doing the comparsa, he doing the music, but this year I heard that he said they're no more festival, no there, more carnival.
There's no more carnival, no more. Because they used to have street carnivals to celebrate July 26th, which is the communist day.
No, it used to be, it used to be San Cande Saint Santiago. Its day is 26th of July. And that's where the Castro got in the street in Oriente, started the revolution.
Uh-huh. He used that day.
It used to be in Oriente, a week carnival. And this, the week before 26th of July. Because Santiago is the same for the province. The Oriente province, Santiago de Cuba. And that's where Castro jumped and started the revolution. And going and fight and kill so many people and their husband and all that. That's where he started the revolution against Batista. In the same time, the festival. But now, he said there's no more festival. It stopped.
This year,
he said no more.
There's a big shortage of food and stuff like that. And they had like a big cookouts and stuff like that.
And you cannot sell
nothing.
And now
this year, they can't do it.
He said you cannot sell it.
They're also having the Pan American Games now in August. August 16th.
You know, going to have the money for feed so many people.
So many
the festival
outsiders.
And so many people in the international, what do you call it? The Pan American is this coming month. It's hard.
I was just thinking something. What, you've got a new group, you know, comparsas. But how do you think they can improve? You know, what if you're gonna if you have most of the same people, you know, how are you gonna make it better? Or, you know, or do you want it?
Oh, yeah, I want it. I want to keep the group.
To make it, no, ¿qué tú crees que se puede hacer para hacerlo mejor?
What makes a good group? You know, what makes a good comparsa?
Well, it's, the good comparsa mean, to me, is more understand.
I think it's mostly spirit and enthusiasm.
Enthusiastic and interest.
To tap
because
spirit.
Because in case the children don't got interest, you cannot keep the group. And I got the enthusiasm, I got the interest, I got the spirit, I got everything.
But the problem is
but
not
the
just
problem
us,
is not only
everybody
us.
Has to have it.
Everybody.
I think that's the main thing. I think that it's an individual thing that everybody has to have and to want to do it. And once you're in the group and you're doing it, then have the spirit as a group because it becomes teamwork then. It's not an individual
thing.
So
you don't go so much for, you know, precision dancing.
No.
It's spirit.
Right.
Yes, yeah, spirit.
And have a good time.
Yeah. And keep because and if keep, it was precision, keep where's the name. Keep if, keep the name para que where the comparsa.
But if it was precision dancing, then we'd be professional everything. And we're not professionals. We're just learning.
A little group.
Every time and something else comes up, somebody new joins us. And to me, it's that the kids want to do it, you know.
It's part to keep it, like I like to keep it. I always
like to see it keep going from now on.
Yeah, yeah, it's something that like I study, and I'm very proud for all the children and the parents that he helped me.
Uh-huh.
Because believe me, I cannot do this by myself. I study that, and my daughter helped me. I despair it, but I need the cooperation, and the father, the children, I got few people that he helped me a lot, and I'm very happy, and you don't believe me, I appreciate it. It's something big to me,
yeah.
And especially with the parents, like Linda Meloni, maybe she thinking this, no, but to me it's big, especially Hassan, what Hassan studied with the group. The son don't want to come to the group. I told him, come and see, you know. And he dancing good now. I believe it's something that he make me so happy when I saw Hassan dancing in the group. He dancing like anybody. He make me so happy. You don't believe that.
He might not dance like everybody else.
But he's dancing.
He danced and it was good.
It make me happy. Because he never gave it one step. And I talk to him and I play with him and I bring him to the group. As to, and the first time what I put him in the group, he don't want to dance it. He's going to be the farola boy because he don't want to do nothing. And in the end, he danced it. And you don't believe me, he make me happy. He make me so happy. It's one of the happy. because the other children like to dance and he want to dance it. But the boy, you know, want to dance. But what I saw him dancing, it's like somebody give it to me a lollipop. I enjoy seeing him dancing. Believe me, it's something important to me.
Yeah.
And I think he enjoyed doing it.
And he enjoyed it, believe me.
I mean, it was like getting somebody who didn't want to do it, was fighting tooth and nails to do it. And then when he finally did it, he was laughing and jumping right
he
in
enjoyed.
There.
And yeah. It's something, you know, and this is the group. One is going and one is coming. I cannot promise the whole group, but I got almost everybody in the group. But this is like that. One going and maybe coming and maybe the group not going to be so big, but I try to keep. I try to keep the group the best I can. And what the parents help do.
How about the costumes? Is there, I mean, are you teaching anybody how to make the costumes?
It's so little children in.
We've had them there at the sandwich shop where my mom's sewing and stuff like that. But these kids are so busy.
And the parents, everybody works.
Some of the boys like Buddy and Leo and them, we taught them how to make the farolas. And they were watching us and they helped us, you know, repair them after Fantasy Fest. The sewing part, the kids watch and they're there because at the practice, because we practice sometimes at my mom's sandwich shop on the street. Yeah. We blocked off the street with a bunch of chairs and we stopped traffic and we dance. And during the break, my mom be sewing and the kids watch, but they're not interested in sewing.
I just started now, I make an arena new dress. Because Irene's dress used to be short, and I'm making long one because she want to look like the girl. And after I cut Irene's blouse, because I cut in this blouse with no pattern. Mm-hmm. It's in my mind. And I cut it, you know, I put it, like I told you, one blouse on top. Irene, this blouse, I feed you, I put it and I cut it. And what I make, Irene's blouse, and I cut it, and I sew by hand first. And I make Irene, the blouse come perfect. What I doing is, before I sew all together, I put it in the piece that keep with citizen paper, and I make the blouse.
You made a pattern.
I'm making a pattern. I know I can wear use that for a smaller for medium, because she's small.
Make a pattern on this.
I make one. Yeah, I make now. This come to my mind because all the time I supposed to sew one dress and top to cut it, one and top to another. Now I got one pattern for the blouse because I can do in the skirt part. You know, come to my mind is all
she
the,
doesn't need a pattern for that.
And
the like, other one she needs is to be able to adjust according to the size of the girls.
Yeah,
the
to make the blouse. Yeah. Because the skirt is so much ruffle, but the way you cut the skirt is easy to cut the skirt that you cut the blouse. Because the skirt is the ruffles who make the skirt. It's only one flat piece. The material, the blouse is the one that you're supposed to fit it, because some girl got more breast to another one, some got a small breast, some another girl is chubby, and she need more size, more material in the side, it's different size the arm, you know. Yeah. I cut this pattern for a ring blouse, I keep it there to see I can match it up and start make different side the pattern, because the girl always different shape. It's girl, I got little children and I got medium and younger, you know, different sizes. And I started cutting it up because I want to start making extra few dresses. I need to make few because the first one for last year, the girl grow.
How about the farolas? Where'd you get those?
The farola is my
we
idea.
We just made that up.
The guy that I showed you a pack.
Yeah.
I showing him how I supposed to make the farola. And he my carpenter and he doing the work.
He making
the carpenter work.
He helped you make the stick with
the thing and I make the decoration myself.
And then we decorated it.
They work good.
It's look beautiful, you see, it's something different. It's something different.
And what's that thing he wears to hold it?
There's a carpenter, what do you call him? The carpenter wear the stuff in here?
Or is that for fishing?
No, it's for fishing.
It's for fishing.
I don't know.
It's a leather piece for fishing pole.
I don't know. I saw that.
And we stick the stick in there for the men so it won't hurt their groin.
It's something crazy, but it's working.
Yeah.
It's working because they're so heavy that you
it's
cannot put
heavy.
In your stomach.
And we were thinking of a way because after a while it starts slipping down, you know.
So that was your own idea?
Just all my idea.
Yeah, it works great.
Put it in the, like that you can keep it there.
You can manipulate it.
You can manipulate it because in case you keep this in your stomach, is this is the only way.
It's
I started
painful.
Thinking, I said, I saw something, you can put it there. And I started looking, and I saw this in the flea market, and I see two, and I bought it.
So because the comparsa dancing actually stopped for a while,
for 10 or 11 years.
Yeah, because it stopped for a while, you had to sort of reinvent some stuff or just
make up
your own way.
Yeah. Like the farolas, I don't know. I've never really seen one before. But
not like that. Bocita no used to have it not
Bocita
like that.
Bocita didn't have them like that. He had some... Like, they look like kites with paper mache type things. They were big, like square boxes, and really humongous, really big on the top and real colorful. And it had his name on it, Bocitas Comparsa. And he had those, I remember. But I, we don't know how to make those, so we had to kind of invent our own.
I tried to see the...
We needed something lightweight so it wouldn't be too heavy so that if we didn't have a man to carry it, a child can carry it too, or one of the
Because you
don't
remember the last day in the dancing, I danced with one farola myself.
Yeah. How about in Cuba today?
Yeah, he got in the farola.
Are they the big ones?
Yeah, the big one, but I don't know what I put it because you can see that he lighted. You can see they got light,
inside.
Yeah.
So they dance at night.
Yeah, at night.
Because a farola is like a lantern.
Yeah,
it's one of those street
lanterns.
That's
what he called it. This is the La Leyenda. What's the La Leyenda?
The legend?
Uh-huh. They used to be like farola because you see the square side. I got one that's a square like the faro that you got in the street the old time.
The old lamps.
The lamps?
The old street lamps that have many sides to them.
This is the real way to
make a farola.
And what a Bocita got, he put it, he got like a paper, but in Cuba, the people put it light.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how I can make this something like that. And sometimes it's dangerous too, because in case it's getting fire, with so many little children, you know, it's a trouble.
What you have works.
It's worth
it.
Yeah.
Because it's with the lights at night, and the lights hit it just so, it kind of gives it a glitter.
With the glitter look, but I supposed to be behind the staff all the time before Christmas time because I can find the only this decoration I can find the only around Christmas.
Yeah.
As to Christmas, I in trouble. To go to White Spring and get that one, us going to Miami looking for all these places like crazy. That's what I get a green and red.
To find that different, the streamers that we
have. Yeah, because only coming Christmas time. But now I know I can buy a few packs and put it away.
Yeah.
In case I need it between, you know? Because I think my farola is beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think Salvador, he doing good job.
Yeah.
He enjoyed doing the farola.
Yeah.
He won his big farola.
Oh, he wanted the
big
one?
Yeah, I got a Jesus. They get the little and, no, I want my big farola. He think he's the owner. And I glad to see him with the farola. You know, he enjoyed. The girl said, this is the farola man.
Yeah.
It's made it for him because he play, you know.
He knows, he twirls it really good.
Yeah.
And he's little man.
Yeah.
He's little man.
Well, I think we probably have enough on tape.
Okay, niño. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
No errors there so far.
Okay, this is Bob Stone for the Bureau of Florida Folklife Programs. It's May 5th, 1991. I'm here in Tampa, Florida, recording Charlie Grote and Cheryl Bellinger. Charlie's on guitar and Cheryl's playing auto harp for this number. This will be Wildwood Flower.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Try it again.
Mm-hmm.
Don't mean to talk about the tune, or
you're on.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is Charlie Grote with Cheryl Bellinger here in Tampa. We are about to play a tune that was made famous by the Carter family, and is particularly associated with Maybelle Carter and her auto harp playing. And it's called The Wildwood Flower. I'll play guitar on this. Let Cheryl play the auto harp.
Okay.
Ready?
Ready.
Yeah, this tune, this is Charlie Grote again. This tune is a tune that was the theme song of the old Carter Family radio show. And we thought it'd be nice to include that, and because it has some nice Carter-style flat picking in it, as well as a nice auto harp solo in the Maybelle Carter style done by Cheryl Bellinger. And it's called, did I say this? Keep on the Sunny Side. The dark and the troubled side of life. There's a bright and a sunny side too. All we meet is the darkness and the strife. The sunny side we also may view. Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help. Thank you. how to play it, though.
You're on, Charlie.
Okay, having not rehearsed this very much, this is your old buddy Charlie Grote playing Listen to the Mockingbird in the key of G for all you students out there in Radio Land. Are we ready?
You're ready.
Spinning Wheel.
Where's it come from?
It's an old tune. It has lyrics, and it's done as it was a sentimental parlor piece in its former incarnations. Here's one of those tunes from Texas, and this one is called Waltz Across Texas. And if you look at the copyright on this, you'll see that it's copyrighted by a fellow named Talmadge Tubb. Now, Talmadge Tubb was a relative of the famous Ernest Tubb, and Ernest Tubb recorded this. And it's true that the version that we commonly hear is Talmadge Tubb's version. But this version was around long before Talmadge in the hill country in East Texas.
When you dance with me, dear, my world in disguise, it's a fairyland story come true. And when you look at me with those stars in your eyes, I can waltz across Texas with you. Waltz across Texas with you in my arms, I can waltz across across Texas with you. Like the storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms, and I could waltz across Texas with you. Aches and troubles are just up and gone the very moment that you come into view. And with you in my arms, I can dance all night long, and I can waltz across Texas with you. Oh, waltz across Texas with you in my arms, I can waltz across Texas with you. Like the storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms, and I could waltz across Texas with you. Texas with you in my arms, I could waltz across Texas with you. Like the storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms, and I could waltz across Texas with you.
Charlie Grote in Tampa with Cheryl Bellinger, and we are attempting to document something of the teaching process. And, of course, this is in an intimate situation, just the two of us working. And the first thing that I like to do is make a little chart that shows the chord structure and the timing of the tunes, because that's the foundation and the basis of it all. And I've done that with a tune called Listen to the Mockingbird here. Now, Cheryl and I both read music, and so that's a tremendous advantage in doing this. In fact, I find that if a person can't read music, I want to teach them to at least read the timing element of music before we start. We don't have to do that in this case. And so Cheryl can see it on a piece of paper here in front of us, a chart that shows the music notes running along the line and the chords that the notes are connected with above. Now, what we're going to do next, and this is what you were talking about earlier, Cheryl, and I didn't catch what you meant, and I do now. What we're going to do now next is work with which chord bars produce the melody to this piece. As we work on it, we're going to write down the name of each one of those chord bars underneath the associated note. Now, there's a system for determining what these chord bars are, and that's a study that Cheryl and I are working on but haven't advanced on a long way. So for the purposes of this right now, I'm just going to play the tune and dictate the changes to Cheryl, who's going to write them down under the associated note. Or something like that there.
I'm ready.
If I can get my harp out here. My harp is kept in a homemade wood box that looks something like a bureau drawer, and Ernie Williams, the great banjo picker, once said that I was the only musician he knew of who carried a drawer with him everywhere he went. Now, all right, Cheryl, the first notes, the first three notes there are going to be G's, G chord bars. The next one is a D. And the next one's a D, too. So you're going to go. D. This next one is a C. Or can be a C, yeah. Now the next one's a G. These are all G's.
All the way across?
Yeah. Now in this next phrase, that's a D. And the next one's a D. D, C.
C?
Yeah. And then G. And that G runs out to here. And then D here. D through here. C here. That one's a C.
This one right here?
No, this one, that one's a C.
Okay.
This one's a G that you marked C here. And then G. These are G's. I'm lacking a note. Put another note in there.
Well, that wouldn't.
Now make this a quarter note.
This one here?
This one half here? Note make.
Okay.
This is G, G. Then. D, G, and C. This C clear through here, then D here. These three are D, then G. So let me check it now. Let me play it and see if I got it right. Okay, that's the first part of Listen to the Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. So we'll start with working on that. So, pick up your pencils, class.
Gee, I'm supposed to be playing with pencils. I'll try these.
Now, we talked about, I have talked many times about intervals and how to play them. This is the tonic that this tune starts on. The do of the scale.
D7, this is just...
Yeah, it's just D7. Well, no, use a D7.
D7.
Actually, I'm wrong about that. This is the 5. That note right there. Find that note. Got it? Okay, now what you're going to do... You're going to play that same note all the way through here, but you change the chord bar. The note stays the same. Yeah. Just try that much. Just that little phrase right there. Now let me hear you do it by yourself. Picture the tune a little bit better. Listen close. Now change to the D. See it. Okay, good. Got that one. I need to move that because I can't see what I'm doing.
Okay.
Now, the next. Let's work on the next phrase. We've gotten here, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to play through to there, and then I'll play the next phrase. Pay close attention when we get to the end.
All right.
Okay? See what it did? Mm-hmm. Let me play it again. Listen close. Now, as usual, you'll notice I've simplified these notes a little bit.
Yes.
Over the thing. And so what you need to do right now is just to get this picture, is just follow the notes mm-hmm. like they are. Don't worry about the other stuff. That creeps in because I forget to leave it out.
Okay.
There's one other vital thing here that's over on the table, and that's my coffee. Okay. So Professor Stone gonna get my coffee. And he's a sterling gentleman. Mm-hmm. Your name is Sterling, isn't it? I know, be serious. Actually, this can't be serious, because if you get this to being deadly serious, then it's not fun, and learning has to be a fun situation. That's one thing I always try to do. It's sort of hard to recreate in this environment, is that you got to keep it light. Because if you get into a big, grim, dogmatic thing, it's no fun and nothing happens. So, now getting back to that, let's go back and do I'm going to do the phrase we've already studied plus the other phrase, and then the second time through, you join me with both phrases, okay? This time, you do the phrases, and I'll just do that. Ready? One, two, three. Okay, now you try.
A few of the right notes in there, but...
Careful of the time. Careful of the timing. Yeah. Now, the next part of it is essentially just the same until you get to the end of what would be the first phrase, and then it goes into the climax of the phrase, which is going to be, now I'm going to take it from here. Mm. Then. See how that goes?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's different, see?
Yeah, right.
Now you go down here, you're looking for this note. Find the note. Look for this note right here. Just find this note first.
This is on the D, right?
Yeah, no, you're on the G.
I'm sorry.
You're right here.
Oh, that one. I was thinking. Yeah.
Listen.
Okay.
And then we're going to do the whole phrase together. Ready? Mm-hmm. Your turn.
The whole thing?
Sure.
Okay.
This hardest thing in this part. Normally, we're going to try to accelerate this a lot. What I'm going to do next, I wouldn't do this quickly. I mean, she's a very quick student, so it might work. But normally, the thing would be to have her get a whole lot more used to just where these notes are over a longer time. The next step now is to start putting in strokes, strums, and whatnot. As you've heard already, she already has a very good sense of what strokes should be there because most of those strokes were right, just as they were. And that wasn't the case at all when we started out, but she's learned very well what to put in where and has it. So now the thing to do, and we can't do this because we're not in a visual medium, but I'm going to be showing her, and she's going to be watching the type of strokes that I'm using.
I got the visual medium right here.
There you go. one of the things about this is I don't like to teach in a rote method. What I like to do is get people off the ground and then say, don't play it exactly like I play it, but put yourself into it. That's part of the folk process on this. If we were doing classical music, we might have this all written out and it'd be very rigid, but that's not the way this music works. So just watch some of the stuff that I do, and I'm going to try to put in a couple of little doubles, no triples at this point, and some of those rhythm strokes and so forth. Most of it, what you were doing was just right. Rolling? Okay, as we were saying, we're going to try to accelerate this into the point where we'd probably be, say next week, working on the strokes and so forth. This is a very complicated and challenging piece, and we're way back at the very beginning of doing this. So let me see what I can invent that doesn't have all the filigree on it, and then we'll go on from there. Okay, that used a little hammer at the end, as you heard, and there were a couple of doubles. And most of it was simple wrist motion and pinches. So let's try to look at the first phrase and go. And that's what we're going to do for a rhythm thing. You know what? I want you to try, like I was trying to say before, you're getting your hand too flat. You need to stay round. And be relaxed, though. You tend to be tense, your hand. That's better. Work a little more from the wrist. Try to get this. Just do this a little bit. Very smooth. Now let's try it. Okay. 1, 2, 3. this is a case of do as I say and not as I do. I blew one of the chords there, so.
Maybe that's why we were playing.
All you listeners in Radio Land, that was me screwing up and not Cheryl. Okay, so let's see what you can do with that same little thing. Just make sure that, like we talked about in the past, that the rhythmic thing goes on, you know, all the time.
Okay.
Let me count you in. 1, 2, 3. Real easily.
Ooh, it's hard for me to stay with that.
Well, that's the nugget of the process of teaching this. Mm-hmm. What we would do from here is once she had mastered a few licks, we'd go on with a few more, and we'd talk about there's all kinds of wrist motions that you can put in to do triplets with, and trilling like mandolin trilling. You can even go. Real fancy stuff like that in it if you want to. I don't know how much further to take this right now because now she needs time.
Okay.
Or playing it a lot slower. Mm-hmm.